This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Chad. I'm a Gen X grown-up. I support Gen X grown-up through Patreon, and you can too at patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X grown-up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listeners, to this episode 165, the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, is George. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Would not be a show without Mo. How you doing, Mo?
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
In this episode, we head to the theaters to see a new comedy horror film that would feel right at home in the 80s, check out some tech that delivers crystal clear free content to your fancy smart TV, and dive into the latest from the Life is Strange franchise, where your superpower is psychic empathy. Didn't know that could be a superpower, but we're going to find out how in just a little bit. Before we get to those topics and many more, it's time for some fourth listener email. Look, there's the three of us. If we listen, that's great. If anybody else does, we're stunned and so happy, and you are the fourth listener.
Are we really stunned at this point?
Sometimes. Yes, sometimes.
Okay. I'm always surprised.
Mo's forever been surprised that anyone listens, so he has great confidence in us. Maybe less than me. The fourth listener this time around was actually not via email or on our Discord server, but a message left on my daily vlog. I do a personal video blog every morning, and many of those, there's a lot of crossover where people really watch us here and there and whatever. Anyway, Old Man Votney is the username of this fourth listener, dropped me a line on my vlog, and this is what he had to say. FYI, Gen X Grown Up and 1980s Now podcasts are making people have questions about me.
Okay.
Yeah. What? So he continues, Midwest winter means hats or a hood, and you can't see the earbuds when I'm walking the dog. I am often laughing like a fool, and people don't know what to think.
Now I get it.
They think he's one of those guys hanging out in Moe's neighborhood in New York who's just talking to himself all the time.
Just walking around
talking to himself.
Laughing at himself maniacally. Yeah. That's funny. Luckily, there are not as many people out in the cold, and the dog doesn't care. That is from Old Man Votney, who dropped me a line over on my vlog. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for taking the time to write in. We're glad. We're actually glad that we're making you look a fool. That's fine. Because we're doing what we're supposed to do. And that's
right. That's our job. Make people look foolish.
We're good at it, especially for us. So. Thank you again. We love it every time the fourth listener takes time to write in. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's so easy. Just drop us a line at podcast@genxgrownup.com or read every single one, and most of them, like Old Man Votney's, will eventually make the show. All right, guys, with that good business behind us, it's time to jump into the body of episode 165 right after this quick break. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack, and it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
There are multivitamins, and there are multivitamins. Vitamins that are flaky, bumpy, crispy, crunchy, and taste oh so good. It's Kellogg's Product 19. More vitamin nutrition than any other cereal, but you'd never know by tasting. Because Product 19 goodness comes from corn, oats, wheat, and rice. Delicious. Kellogg's Product 19 cereal. Flaky, bumpy, crispy, crunchy. Mmm. Vitamin.
Let's get the ball rolling, talking about media that we have been checking out and consuming, hopefully enjoying, since the last time we spoke. Now, of course, this could be film or television or comics or books or music or whatever in the world of media. Mo, let's start with you. What have you been checking out?
Well, it's one of these shows on Netflix that you hear about and you're like, you know, like you're really worried about it.
That's a lot of shows on Netflix.
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
I love that introduction to the
thing. Let me tell you,
he's going to talk about. You see that thing and you go, now let's talk about it for 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're sitting there like, is this a good idea? So basically, it's the Avatar, The Last Airbender. They did a live action version of this show. Okay, now, I don't know if you guys ever watched the animated version.
I mean, well, that's what I was about to say. This Avatar, Last Airbender stuff is kind of starting to get like the Ghost in the Machine stuff was in the 90s, where there's like 15 different series of this stuff.
Well, this is actually, well, there was the original show that came out like 20 years ago. And me and the kids watched it religiously on Nickelodeon. Like, it was one of the few shows that we'd get together, wait every week, and watch it when it came out, the new episodes, because we just loved this show.
Okay. Right.
And so when we heard it doing a live action, it was, I'm like, oh, why? You know, that's the first question. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it because I have to admit, I've always wanted to see someone do like element bending in like real life. So I'm like, I'm gonna watch this.
Do it well. Do it well. Not like the film you made me go see that was not.
Let's not talk about that. I'm trying to block out that movie. So when I first started watching it, I was like, it was different. I'm like, oh, did they screw it up again? And then as I watched it, I realized, okay, I gotta just take the original show out of my head and just watch it for its own thing as best I can. And it's hard
to enjoy it as its own creation.
Exactly. And but it's very difficult because they're pulling on such a like a set lore and a set series that is really difficult to do. But what they did, it was really good, actually, to tell you the truth. I thought it was really well done, really, really well acted. The special effects are mind-blowingly good. Like, they made things not look silly that, for sure, I thought was going to look silly.
Which was the part you're waiting on. You wanted to see the effects done well in live action. Oh, yeah,
and it definitely delivered on that. Yeah. But the thing is that they're copying the first season of the original show of Avatar, which was like 20 episodes or something like that. They're trying to do it in 8 and tell that whole complete story. So watching it, there's some episodes where they're condensing so much stuff because there's critical characters you need at the end that don't have time to do a full story. So they're just sort of throwing them in, you know, like introducing them, like, oh, here's so-and-so that we need later. Here's so-and-so we need later. I got to tell you, though, some of the actors they picked for this thing, I was listening to a review on the radio about it. And someone said, like, there's a character called Sokka. He's like the brother that goes around them. And the guy says, okay, when I saw him on the screen, I had paused and I had to look up the cartoon because I thought for sure they CG'd him to look like the cartoon character.
Yeah. Wow.
And he just looks exactly like him. Hmm. It's also great to see because there's a whole bunch of like new actors that have like maybe one or two credits under the belt, but nothing big. And they're all also young because the characters are like early teenagers, you know, to mid-teenager age. And they got actors that are actually in that age range, which is kind of nice also. Mm-hmm. That you don't have like a 30-year-old trying to pretend to be like a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
But you do see like when it comes out to like the really, really emotional pieces, then you kind of see like, okay, this person will be a great actor, but they're not quite there yet. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's
they don't
not
have
awful.
The emoting chops quite yet. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. I mean, it's not god awful, but you're like, I think a better actor probably could have pulled it off a little bit better. Mm-hmm. They had to change some things, obviously. It's no longer a kid show, a little kid show at all. I would not have, like, before my kids were watching, they were like 8 to about 11, that age range or maybe a little older. But if they were that age, I wouldn't have them watch this one because they actually show, like, firebenders. Like, you don't actually see the bodies burning, but you see bodies on fire. Which they never did before. You just sort of is in the background. You knew it was kind of happening, but they never talked about it.
A little more adult, more mature audiences. Yeah, okay.
Definitely more adult. Some of the themes they threw in there are definitely more more adult too, because basically this 100-year war has been going on. And they talk to people, you see that they have felt the effects of a 100-year war. Mm. Whereas the cartoon, they kind of didn't really have that. They were in a war, but, that's a sort of, separate.
Okay.
It's still mixing, like, that humor that the original series had. Like, it was, like, lighthearted at times, and they just don't have that at all anymore. So, it's good. I want there to be a second season. Mm-hmm. But the big question I have in my head is, why recreate the exact first season again? That
just do
doesn't
it over
make
again.
Sense to me.
In live action.
They could have done a live action that continued the story after the season ended. Like maybe they went off and did some other adventures and they could have done live action on that. And they could have done the past and done some of the older. I mean, there was so much history and they built this world so well. They had so much to choose from. Why retell the same story? And after watching, I'm not sure why they would do that. Like, I'm not sure what value there was to that.
Hmm. But you're going to keep watching it, you think? I mean, so you watched all there is probably. You want there to be more second
season.
I
watched the first few, but I already tell, like, okay, I'm going to want a second season for sure.
Okay. All right. So you said it's on Netflix, right?
It's on Netflix. Yep. Right now. Okay. And they dropped all the episodes too, so you could watch them all right away.
Binge away.
So that's what I got. So I've heard a lot about what you saw, John. So I'm really curious to see what you thought.
Yeah. So I went to the theater and I saw Lisa Frankenstein. I don't want to put this film in a box, or I'll say that I enjoyed it right up front. I don't want to put this film in a box, but there's an easy shorthand to give you an idea of what this film is like. It's half Edward Scissorhands and half Warm Bodies. If you remember that film about the zombie kid. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Nicholas
and
Holt.
It's as, yes, and it's if that film was done by Tim Burton as a student film when he was about 19, which is not to say it is not skillful. It's not to say this is a well-directed film. But it's not fully Tim Burton-y. Like, you can see the Tim Burton-ness coming through it, but it's not fully a Tim Burton-style film. He has nothing to do with this film. It has the gothic kind of lighthearted approach to death and that sort of thing that you would see in things like The Corpse Bride and so many things that Tim Burton did. He's not involved, though. So that's kind of the tone. The concept of the film is there's a young lady who is like a junior, senior in high school, and she's the aloof one. She's not quite goth, but she's just not comfortable in her own skin, like many teenagers are in high school. She can't find her place among her peers. But she has found that she's very captivated by, there's a graveyard between her house and school, and she takes that path, and she like does rubbings of the headstones, and she talks to the people, and she writes letters to them and stuff. So she kind of has this one-sided relationship with these headstones in this very, very old cemetery. Well, they jump ahead to, inexplicably, there's a lightning storm, lightning bolt strikes one of the graves. And this guy, there's actually a bust of him on his gravestone, so you know what he looks like, who's been dead for 100 years or more, comes shambling back to life. And because I guess he has heard her talking to him, he goes to her house and goes walking in. Here comes a zombie in her house. Now, the shock of that gets over pretty quickly, and then it becomes this Romeo and Juliet thing where everybody just accepts, fine, there's zombies. And it's not so much a traditional love story like they are in love. It's more of they have built this relationship, and now you have this previously dead guy who is trying to figure out how to be alive again thanks to a short-circuited tanning bed they have in the garage that substitutes in for Frankenstein's lab. And the young lady who has found now a friend who relies and depends on her, but it's this zombie. And, you know, you can't take him places. You don't know what how to deal with it. And it progresses. I should mention he doesn't have all of his parts at the beginning of the film. They didn't all survive. So he's missing a few parts. And she's a seamstress who can help somewhat in putting parts back on him. I won't tell you what parts. I'll let you discover that in the film. It's a sweet little movie. I've heard reviewers say in a few years, this will be a cult classic. We don't know that right now, but they say that it has that feeling that it may not find its audience right out of the gate, but it has those beats like a coming of age film, you know, a little bit weird and creepy, a little bit quirky, mm-hmm. things that end up being cult classics, you know, like your Rocky Horror Picture Show and things like that, that come out of nowhere to become very, very popular. So it's got middling reviews. I think I've seen it's getting like 6 or 7 stars out of 10, things like that in a lot of places. I think it depends on what kind of movie you're looking for. But if you like comedy horror as a mashup, it's certainly worth watching. And they may be right. It may turn into a cult classic in the future.
So would you say this is this like a smart film? You know what I mean? Like the humor or is it very pretty much like kind of lowbrowish, I guess? If that makes sense.
There's plenty of slapstick physical comedy, okay. but the writing is also pretty sharp. Yeah. Okay. So it's somewhere between. It's not super highbrow, but it's also not, you know, dumb fart jokes and bathroom humor either. Although there's a pretty good bathroom joke in there, I will admit.
Okay. So, if they're good, I mean, that's fine.
If they're good. Yeah. So Lisa Frankenstein, it actually just hit streaming. So you should be able to find it even if you didn't go to the theater, but I think it still is in the theater as well. Worth checking out, especially if you enjoy that particular genre.
Nice.
So, George, let's move along to you. What have you been watching?
Well, I'm going to try and be a little bit mysterious because if I say a key word, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And everybody's going to have a bunch of preconceived notions about what I watched. And I you to actually take time to go watch. This is an hour and 37 minute documentary about one of the biggest events from our 80s nostalgia childhood. And I'll say at the end of the documentary, I did cry. So it was a very powerful, moving documentary. It's called The Greatest Night in Pop. It's on Netflix. I'll say that the documentarians did a wonderful job of using current day interviews mixed together with archival footage, some of which you may have seen in different venues, some of which you have absolutely probably never seen before, to tell the story of a specific night that I didn't realize how it happened because I wasn't following stuff like that. There was no internet at the time for us to research and find these things out. I just knew when the event became public. Just like everybody else. And oddly enough, if you haven't been able to figure it out by now, this event took place at the exact same time in every free country in the world.
What?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Mo knows exactly what it is. I can see him nodding his head. Mo's got a good memory for it.
Okay.
So remember the title, The Greatest Night in Pop.
Yeah.
So we're talking about pop music.
Yeah. When I see in pop, it makes me think of like King of Pop, Michael Jackson, but I have no idea what this event might be, if that's right.
So
that's one of them.
It doesn't reference him directly, but he is a key individual in the documentary.
All right. Okay.
So The Greatest Night in Pop talks about the planning and recording of We Are the World.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Quincy Jones, all those guys, right?
Yeah. So there are a lot of people involved in this that you do not realize. At least a lot of people probably don't realize. People who became fans of this have probably researched it and maybe they realize. But for me, I didn't realize. Like, for instance, I did not know who the originator of the idea was. So we all know Bob Geldof did the thing in England, Live Aid, about 6 months before We Are the World, right? He did the Do They Know It's Christmas After All song with the British pop stars.
Sure.
Well, somebody in America who had himself recently been on a tour of Africa and seen all the blight and the famine in Ethiopia and everything else decided we needed to do this, but bigger. And that man was not Michael Jackson, and that man was not Quincy Jones. They were brought in by an agent who was given the idea by Harry Belafonte.
Seriously?
Yeah.
He was at the center of it, huh?
Deo, Harry Belafonte was the man who came up with the idea to do We Are the World. Now, oddly enough, he got in touch with his agent who just also happened to be the brand new agent for Lionel Richie when he had left the Commodores. Like the year before Lionel Richie's 84 had blown up. That's when he had his Dancing on the Ceiling, All Night Long album stuff.
The planets are aligning, I see.
Right. So he came up with this whole idea and he said, let's do it. And they said, okay, we're going to call Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. We're going to put Lionel Richie and Stevie Wonder together to write this song.
Okay.
Lionel Richie calls Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder doesn't return his call.
Lionel who?
They've known each other for years in Motown. Wait, he doesn't return his call. So in comes the third person they were already going to bring in, Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie spend time together. They start writing the song together. Of course, they're screwing off and not really getting time. The whole thing boils down to timing, because if you think about it, even in 1985, before there was an internet, before there's Microsoft Calendar or Google Calendar, anything to help you coordinate something like this, they're doing all of this over the phone with Rolodexes, trying to get 40 plus of the best pop stars in the world together in one night to do this.
Yeah.
Guess how they did it?
Well, it wasn't a group text, we know.
Right.
No, it was not a group text.
Carrier
they
pigeon.
Literally like had suitcases full of Rolodexes with them, going all over the place, calling and agents and directly and everything. They decided the one night that they could get everybody together. I mean, because think about it, people are on tour, they're doing videos, they do it the night that Lionel Richie is hosting the VMA Awards, because they're all going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Smart.
Okay. In Los Angeles, they find an auditorium down the way. A&M Records is where they decide to go. So after a long day of doing all the prep for the VMA and everything else, Lionel Richie and these 40 plus other artists meet at A&M Records, and nobody leaves until 8 a.m. the next morning. Mm. Watch the documentary and enjoy.
I feel like I almost did just now, but... it's all little details are relevant.
Sorry, I'm a little long-winded because it's such a great subject.
Yeah, that's a great story. Like, I didn't know even the genesis with Harry Belafonte and that kind of thing. And it never occurred to me, oh, gee, how do you get in touch with all these people? You know, now celebrities have other celebrities in their contacts and they just text Justin Timberlake and see what he's doing. No, you got to call a guy. He has an agent. Yeah, of course. So they're all in one place already for something else. Hijack them.
Yeah, there's some great stories about Stevie Wonder in there, and especially look for the subplot of Prince's involvement.
There's always a subplot with
him. I remember when Weird the World launched that night, when it was like the worldwide simultaneous, you know, but just the idea that they got
DJ's radio station all around the world. Yep.
And just the idea of watching the video and watching Cyndi Lauper, Bruce Springsteen, Ray Charles. I mean, you're like, how did and I was thinking, like, how did they get these people together? I mean, there's
right, obviously like, going with the next guy, like, and him and her and him too. Like it's just, you keep seeing the video.
Yep.
How are they all there?
Yeah. Even the background singers are all like famous people. Yeah.
Right.
So
it's so great to see those singers too, that are still with us, of those that are still with us. Telling their personal stories about the experience. Because one of my favorites was a part of We Are the World, Huey Lewis, right? From Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he gets a line in the song that he delivers right between, I think it was right between Stevie Wonder and Cyndi Lauper or something like that. Anyway, turns out that wasn't going to be his line at all. That was going to be some other pop artist line who didn't show up.
Oh.
And Kenny Loggins recommended Huey Lewis sing
there
that line. It's just weird little quirky things like
Good
to make that documentary
how things
so
happen.
Awesome. Anyway, Greatest Night in Pop. It's on Netflix right now. Hour and 37 minutes. If you enjoy the 80s, you won't hate this documentary. You'll love it.
Yeah, very sounds cool. Awesome. I'm in.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
Never will eyeshadow ever be the same again. Revlon revolutionizes eyeshadow with Customize, a new kind of compact you can fill and refill with Revlon shadows you choose. Just the gorgeous Revlon colors you want to have. Customize your eye look with the great new compact you fill and refill with Revlon colors you choose. New Customize by Revlon. Beautiful.
So, John, it looks like you had to get a new piece of equipment.
I did. Is that right? Absolutely. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a great lead into our tech and toy section. What'd you get?
Genius. How did you manage
Hopefully
that?
Hopefully he's going to talk about that tech in this segment. Yeah. He's not going to talk about his next toilet seat or something.
Why'd you even bring it up? No, of course. Well, you know, at the end of every episode, we play outtakes. Sometimes it's us flubbing a line. Sometimes it's technical issues. Sometimes it's somebody in the other room making noise and we yell at them. Whatever it is, some outtake, something that doesn't make the show, we put at the end of the episode. If you're just finding this out for the first time, you got to go back and listen to the whole catalog because every episode has one. But just a couple of recordings ago, maybe a month or so ago, that outtake was my microphone having an absolute fit. It just started making crackly noises and you couldn't hear me. It was bananas.
It was this huge noise. Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's a fine anomaly. And then it happened again about a week later. We're recording on 1980s now. I'm like, oh no, this is systemic. This is just a one-off. You'll remember you replaced your Blue Yeti not too long ago,
yes.
Mo. Well, my Blue Yeti, I looked back. I made a video about it on our YouTube channel back in 2017 when I got it. This thing is definitely put in its service.
Yeah.
So it was time to get a new one. Knowing then that I needed to replace it, I started looking at everything that we all have. I looked, Mo, at the new Yeti that you got, which is a newer model. I looked at that. I looked at the mic that George uses now, which is a Samson Q2U or U2Q or FU2 or whatever it is. Different kind of microphone. Looked at that one. I talked to my colleagues over at 1980s now. I talked to Will and Kat and found out, you know, what kind of stuff do they use? And I did a bunch of research and I settled on, they all have their pros and cons and benefits. And I actually think we all have the right mics for our voices and our personalities. But the one I picked up was an Audio Technica, great brand I'm familiar with. Audio Technica has an AT for Audio Technica 2020. I picked up the USB variant. They have one that has an XLR, and then there's one that supports USB. I know that, George, your Samson has both in one mic. There's a variant depending on which one you want. So this is a cardioid condenser USB mic. So I had to learn, like, well, what's the difference between dynamic and condenser? And I was talking to you on the phone the other day, George, and I'm like, so here's what I've learned. It's still not enough to really understand it other than the use cases for it.
Right.
It has to do with how it turns vibration into a digital signal. And one uses like a reverse speaker diaphragm. One uses electrical capacitance or something. That's probably the wrong word. Anyway, I ended up settling on actually what you're hearing me speak on right now, which is a new Audio Technica AT 2020 USB Plus microphone. It wasn't just that mic. I had to get the mic and I had to get a windscreen and a new shock mount and little things like that. The mic itself is only $98. I think all in total, I spent like $115 or something to get what used to cost $150 for just a decent microphone comes down quite a bit. Now, what do you think? Initial reaction? Does it sound about the same? Any different? Any better?
Sounds the same to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done lots of tests. I've done A-B tests. I did the Coke and Pepsi comparison thing where I recorded on one on the other. And they both have a great quality sound. I'll definitely, Mo, give you a link down in the description. I really recommend this mic. So far, I've used it for about 2 weeks now. The thing I like about it, I won't say better than the Yeti, but it's an advantage over the Yeti. It doesn't weigh 90 damn pounds. It's not a giant honking microphone.
Okay.
You can't use it as a weapon.
Right. You might remember on my mic stand, I have a zip tied a bottle of cucumber ranch dressing down there as a buoy, as a balance, an offset weight.
I remember that.
I'm going to have to pour some, I guess, out of it because it's going to be too heavy now. I'm going to get Indiana Jones doing the test. Oh, it's too much sand, not enough sand to find the right weight. It's a fine mic. I've been very happy with it so far. You're hearing it right now. So pretty good.
So I got one question for you.
Yeah.
Did you do the smart thing and buy two of them so that you can have one in each one of your recording rooms? Plus that's a backup in case one of them goes bad.
Nope, I did not. But hey, at that price, you know, come next pay period or so, might pick up another one. I think I think I want to make sure that I love it before I go for a second one as a backup. But so far, nothing about this mic has made me unhappy that I made the purchase. So far, so good.
Cool. So how much did it run again?
Just under $100, $98.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. So that's my tech that luckily that was the one I was going to talk about. So you didn't put me on the spot. Phew. I appreciate you. Yeah. How about you? What do you got?
So I have to first explain why I bought this thing. So I have a Samsung TV, you know, smart TVs, and everyone's got smart TVs. You can't buy a TV that's not a smart TV these days, right? And mine had this annoying thing that whenever you turned it on, it would default to this Samsung movie channel thing.
Oh, yeah.
And just start playing. And I don't know why, for some particular reason, it just annoyed me to no end. I don't know why. There's no logic behind it, because you just hit a button, you can switch away. But it just bothered me that it was putting on something that I didn't want and making me watch it, you know, whether I liked it or not. So I was talking to some folks, and I found out that if you have an HD antenna, you actually can set the default channel that it tunes onto, which I didn't know.
All right.
So I was in the hunt now for a digital TV antenna for HD. So I found one on Amazon, of course. It's called, I'm never sure the brand name of this. It's just like, and I'll definitely put a link in if anyone's looking for it. But it's a digital TV antenna for smart TV is actually the title of it. They went for like obvious on this one.
Yeah, searchability. Yeah, they knew what you're looking for.
Searchability. They went for that for sure. It's super small. It's maybe like 7 inches tall. It's not that plugged it in. I put it inside my room, not even near a window, and it picked up like a ton of channels.
Okay.
I was like, holy crap, this was easy. So I switched it to some PBS or some random station that now comes up whenever I turn on my TV that at least I chose it. So I feel like I have more control in my life now. But and it was $21. It was like super cheap too. And I suddenly realized that now, like with all these HD channels, I was like, holy crap, there's a lot of HD programming out there that's just in the air for free
that you don't know about.
Knew about before.
So I was very interested when I saw you put this one on the card, Mo, because I have an HD antenna plugged into my Plex server so that it can grab HD channels and want to record them. However, the one that I have is one of those little small square flat ones that you stick on the window with a suction cup. It's not that great. Obviously, it doesn't pick up all the channels in my area because I really haven't used it. And I have been dying to set up a system that would allow me to, if I wanted to or had to, break away from the YouTube now charges cable channel fucking prices motif of cord cutting that now is worse than the cable companies ever were.
Isn't that crazy?
With my Plex server using the HD antenna to get my local channel so I can watch sports or the shows that my wife likes, like Survivor and those kind of things. Would you say, now this is an indoor antenna, I was going to get like a big outdoor antenna, like rip off the Dish Network satellite off the top of my roof and use that pole
put
and
your
stick
crawl
that one
space
on
above your house or something.
Yeah, but for $21, it sounds like it might be an option for me. How good, like how many channels did it pick up for you? And are they all good signals? Because mine picks up a lot of channels, but they're not all great signals.
So I'm not sure. I should probably look and see how many HD channels are available in our area. I don't know. I know, John, if you happen to know off the top of your head. But
maybe, well, my area is probably 15 or 20 different HD channels, I'm guessing, something like that.
Okay, because I think it picked up, now this one is like not near a window. It's on an interior wall. I just threw it on there just to see what would happen. And I'm getting about, I think I got like 11 of those stations I'm picking up, and they're all like good signals. Now, I'm sure if I moved it to a window, I could probably get even more. Matter of fact, it even comes with like a metal plate with a sticky that you could put, and it'll like attach to it like horizontally. So if you want to put it near something to get better signal, you can. Huh. It comes with a fairly long cord as well. So I think it's like a 12-foot cord, something like that. So I have it not even near a window, and I'm picking up a bunch of channels.
Wow.
So I assume if I move it to a window, I probably get even more.
I might have to try this one before I do the big outdoor external thing that's like $200.
Well, at $20 for an experiment, even for the money you're in work you were going to put in, it might be worth giving a shot just to see.
Well, hey, podcast listener, my name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. There is, I don't know, I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show. Wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at GenXGrownUp.com.
Who is that lady in blue?
All the eyes will be on you when you wear Hanes in shades of blue.
Gentlemen, prefer Hanes.
When you want to know.
beautiful collection of fashion colors to fit your every mood.
Grand?
And when you want to steal the scene, try Hanes in blue or red or green.
Gentlemen, prefer Hanes.
This is the main event of the podcast. For the three in attendance locally and the millions listening around the world, ladies and gentlemen, it's time!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, time to talk about games. We all three have games we want to talk about, and at least one of us has a more modern game. The others fucked off and played something old, and I'm one of those others.
Yes.
I finally broke down, found a sale, and bought Life is Strange True Colors. Now, you already had this game. I think you got it at launch, probably. I'm sure you talked about it in a podcast. So I'm calling this our take two review.
Previously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago, though.
It was quite a while. I was nervous about it because I loved the first Life is Strange. I've replayed it three different times. I've played that little small one with Chloe or whoever the friend was in the first game. I keep forgetting.
Before the storm thing, right?
Before the storm. Yeah. I played that one a couple of times.
Yep.
The second Life is Strange, I didn't finish. I just didn't get into the characters. They didn't grab the
brothers.
Me as much.
That was the boys, right?
Yeah, the two brothers.
Yeah, the brothers. Yeah, exactly. So I was hesitant, and that's why I didn't buy this game when it was full price, because I felt, I didn't like the last one. I want to pay full price for the next one in case I don't like it. So I waited, and I found it on this sale recently for like $14 or something like that. It was super cheap. So I was like, well, shit, I can't not buy it now, I guess.
Yep.
It's a very slow game. Very slow. Much slower than I remembered the original as far as bringing me into the story. It's a lot of storytelling, but not a lot of interaction, which I kind of like in these games. But after getting past that really slow start, it's grabbed a hold of me, and I really, really like this game. The only thing that I'll say that I maybe experienced slightly differently than John did for when John first bought it, and maybe he experienced this or not, I just happened to have an RGB keyboard that I got a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I didn't have one when I played the first Life is Strange game. But Life is Strange True Colors, which uses the color motif to show you people's auras and all their empathy and their
feelings. Get the hell out of here.
It does mess with the keyboard colors during the game.
It changes the color. It's right, because like anger is red and like sadness is blue and something else is purple.
Sweet.
Yeah. But it was like a halo on the screen. That's cool.
Yeah, the colors aren't always syncing like the same colors on the screen.
Yeah.
But like there's times in the first couple of episodes where like she's first getting used to grabbing her colors. And so my keyboard's RGBs just start flickering in random places. Like it can't quite the color. Like she so cute, so fun. It's great to play in a dark room because of that.
That's nuts. I had
no
idea.
If you haven't played it with an RGB keyboard, it might be something novel to just test out and see. Maybe you want to make different choices in the game. John and I had a lot of different choices. When you get to the end of each level, it tells you what you and your friends chose, right?
Different things, right?
John and I did not always agree. There were multiple times when you could tell the two different personalities playing that game.
Yeah.
But it's a fun game. No need to go back through the whole thing. It's a girl who's displaced and she goes to live with her brother and all kinds of craziness ensues day one.
Mm-hmm.
If you like the first Life is Strange, I think you would probably like this third version as long as you're willing to give it 30 minutes before you give up on it. So
that's fair.
That's what I played. Let's move on to another super old game because we're all old. John, what's your rehash for this episode?
My rehash is at least as old, maybe even older. So I went back to Just Cause 4. So
same company, Square Enix.
Yep. This is the big open world game. I know that Mo has played this game. This is like the Far Cries that we can't get you quite into, George. But
yeah, true.
I don't know if this is going to change your mind, but the short version of what I'm going to say over the next 5 minutes is I like this game so much. I wanted a sequel so bad that I deleted my save so I could start over. That's how much I want to play this game again.
Okay.
Because I played the ever-loving shit out of this back when it was new. Yeah. I played all the DLC. I completed all the everything but like the crazy like time missions or something. Like get your car from here. I don't care about that. But all the adventures and all the the wingsuit stunts and all the crazy stuff. The concept of Just Cause, the entire franchise, is you are Rico Rodriguez, basically an action superstar kind of. I mean, you are not a superstar, but you are a superstar in the world of espionage. And
yeah.
I think it says he specializes in regime change is basically what he does.
Okay.
He deposes bad guys that are kind of like dictators over areas and oppressing people. And he does it by causing chaos. That's his thing. That's the whole game's thing. Blowing stuff up, shooting people, tying cars to trees and whipping them around and putting rockets on stuff. Causing chaos is the thing that gets people on his side and helps him to take over. And I played it so much that I'd go back to it sometimes, jump into the save, and all I could do was like fly around in my parachute and my jetpack and nobody to shoot because I've taken over the entire map and it's enormous. And I'm like, I remember that was fun and that was fun. It doesn't have save slots though. My choices are continue or new game, deleting your old game.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't want to lose everything, but then I realized, what am I losing? I have so much to gain by trying it again. So
yeah.
I clicked that new game. It's been a couple of weeks ago now. I clicked new game. It said, are you sure you want to delete? And I'm like, okay, delete. Start at the beginning of the game again. And there's stuff I forgot about this game. I forgot about how you recruit people. I forget about taking over regions. I forgot about there's a woman who's making movies that has you do stunts that she's ostensibly filming somewhere. And so jumping through a hoop is actually a stunt she needed for a movie. And therefore you get credits for it. And it's such a big open world. It's so tongue in cheek too.
Yeah.
It's not super serious. Everything's a little goofy, not comedic, but silly. Just enough that you're like, you don't feel the weight of the story. Beyond, oh, it's, and I forgot that there's a weather control machine and you can't get to areas of the map because there's tornadoes and lightning storms everywhere that I've not yet overcome the machinery and stuff. The whole reason I brought this up is not just this game in particular. Yes, it's awesome. Yes, I'd recommend it. Yes, it's like $10 if you want to try it. If you have a game you love and you wish there was a sequel, consider restarting it because sometimes you'll get as much joy as you did the first time when you go back to it. I am.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of the Just Cause game, his example of the tug and cheek, is if you're falling, you can save yourself by grappling the ground.
Yeah, yeah. You can speed your descent and therefore
no
you're fine.
Sense. It makes zero sense.
Just don't fall.
Just don't fall. If you're falling, but you grapple the ground, which pulls you even quicker to the ground, you're fine.
You're safe.
But I remember we played it. We played some online stuff together with the original one, like Just Cause 2, I think it was.
Yeah.
We did on the Xbox. I mean, it's a great franchise. It's just so much fun. And I'll tell you, there's something satisfying by blowing up some of these bases.
Oh, yeah.
That you just can't get over how like a giant fuel tank and blowing one up. Oh, let me tell you, it doesn't get better than that.
And you can find
that.
Your own way to do it, right? You know, you could just shoot it, or you could bazooka it, or you could put rockets on the back and launch it, or you could tether it to a helicopter or whatever. Yeah, so much fun.
So I do have the first three Just Causes, probably got them in Humble Bundle packs or something.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I know you say that this game is super cheap. I just looked on Steam, and unless it's on is there any deal or something, they still want a premium for this game. It's still $40.
Is it really? Wow. It certainly goes on sale for 10 somewhere. Regularly.
So they don't have a Just Cause, like the original title. What they have is Just Caused Reloaded, which came out in 2018, apparently. That's $40 right now.
Wow.
No, I'm sure you can. I see it on sale all the time. I'm sure
all
you
the time. It's on sale all the time. Next time I see it, I'll let you know because it's so much fun. It's so much fun. Mo, how about you? You're of the three of us, I think you're the only one playing something new, not something from years ago.
It's actually a brand new game. It came out early February, so beginning of the month. I got it from, where did I get this from? I think I got it from like one of the Epic downloads or something. But
a free game?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's called Deliver Us Mars. And it is a story-based third-person view game. Where essentially it's one of these typical things like we're destroying the Earth. The Earth is going to hell in a handbasket. You work at NASA. You're a young kid actually there. And the whole thing is that a whole bunch of scientists took a lot of the latest technology and fled to Mars and left everyone else behind.
Okay.
And so your father was one of the people. So you have to get in a ship with your sisters and some other people, and you're going there to figure out what the hell happened and try to save the Earth, of course, small goals. And it was an interesting game because it's a mix of third person, just moving around, doing stuff. There's no fighting in this at all. Like you're not ever like beating up anybody or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But there is like these little, there's just like a little bit of a puzzle element that you do, like to open certain doors. You have to like position these power generator things that, you know, transmit power from one place to the other. And you have to do them in the right order. So there's a little bit of a puzzle thing in it. But really what gets you in this is like the story itself. It has this amazing story that just pulls you through it. It's one of the few games that you sit with the cutscenes and you're like, I'm going to have to watch this because, you know, it's all part of the story. So it's almost like more of like a living book almost kind of thing that you're playing with this.
That sounds very Life is Strange-y a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like a walking around, talking to people, learning the story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only thing is like, this was definitely more linear than Life is Strange, I think. You know, so it definitely takes you down a path and you have to kind of follow that path. But the story itself and the graphics, especially now because they recently upgraded them with the RTX and all that fun, NVIDIA and all that fun stuff. But I advanced like the parts where you had to play. I wanted to play them to get to the next part of the story so I could see what happens. You know, that's what drove me to do the next.
That's a testament to the game right there. Good story. Good writing.
I'm sitting, I'm like, wait a minute. You have to get to the, and they have some neat mechanics. Like you have a, mountain climbing, like those pitchfork thingies that they use from ice climbing. You know, like, I'm forgetting what they're called.
Ice axe things, whatever.
Yeah, it's an ice axe. You have those and some areas that you have to climb to get around to places. And that's kind of like the little puzzle element of it, you know, a little bit of adventure aspect of it. But really, it's the story that gets you on this. And then every now and then there's like, you know, flashbacks and some stories there. When you get to Mars, like the bases are abandoned, but you find these like hologram that will replay scenes from that happened there that when you weren't there.
I've seen that.
And they're really weird because the bodies are like mannequins or like just like representations of the people. So you'll see these things kind of moving around and talking and stuff while you're standing there watching it. It's a really, really neat game, really well done. And like I said, I finished it. I just played it through because, like, again, it was almost like reading a novel to me. Like, I just had to see what happened next, and I just kept going through it.
Nice. Deliver Us Mars. All right. Well, two oldies and a new one, but all goodies. Nice. All right, stick around. We will be right back.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
If I used an ordinary cream cheese, I'd hear about it.
We bagels would go on strike.
Not use Philly cream cheese?
We desert you.
Why pay so much for everything your recipes call for, then not use Philadelphia brand?
So don't blow it.
All your recipes deserve Philadelphia brand cream cheese. And that's not even counting the biggest investment of all, your time and effort.
I've been told by my mom.
Isn't it silly not to use Philly?
As we come in the last segment of the show, you know, we always like to take a few minutes here to talk about the things we're looking forward to between now and the next time we get together to speak. And I'm going to start with you, Mo. What do you have on the horizon?
Well, I mean, I only have two things, but they're both two big things to me. One is Godzilla X King Kong, which, oh my God, George.
You're talking about two big things. You got, what do you want me to do? It's not my fault.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, so
it's a little your fault.
It's kind of your fault. But anyway, so it's Godzilla X King Kong, the newer Godzilla movie, which again, it's not going to be any Godzilla Minus One, but you know, it's its own type of movie. It's action, it's giant monsters. I'm going to love it. I'm going to watch it. I know it. Doesn't matter.
I saw that King Kong had a big metal glove on, so that's something.
Yeah,
at least.
No idea what that is, but I'm going to watch it and find out.
It looks stupid, but I want to see it. Yeah.
He started watching Michael Jackson videos in the 80s. And so,
and then the other one is Dune Part 2, which actually is its official opening night is tonight as we speak. So I'm definitely going to see this one right away. Been really looking forward to it. I've been trying to avoid looking at any reviews and all that stuff, but you know, you can't avoid the headlines sometimes. Like the headlines just sort of pop up. You can't. So far, all the headlines have been really good. So I have high expectations for it. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
All right. Crossing my fingers for you. Good luck.
Yep. Hoping it's good. How about you, John? What do you got?
Yeah, I have a couple things. There is a new film coming to Amazon Prime March 7th. Called Ricky Stenicki. Just the title made me look to see what it is.
What is that?
The premise is so good. This group of childhood friends had an imaginary person they blamed everything on. If somebody broke something, oh, it was Ricky Stanicki, like some friend of theirs that came over, right? And they've continued to use this guy with their wives and everybody to blame anything they do wrong on this guy that never existed.
Okay.
But their wives get suspicious, so they hire this washed up actor to portray this imaginary person, and shenanigans ensue. So it sounds really funny. The trailer looked good, so I'm interested in that. The second thing, and thing I'm most looking forward to, you guys remember that Karateka special gold edition that was put out by Digital Eclipse? The second one of those is about to drop. March 13th, LlamaSoft, the Jeff Minter story. So this is another one based on a video game author, a creator, a developer who started as a young boy. This spans his entire career. This is the guy that wrote Mutant Camels on, was it Mutant Camels on Mars or whatever, the Attack of the Mutant Camels. He wrote that Akaara game, I think, that you got, Mo, in your Tempest cabinet. Yeah. And this collection, first, you know it's going to be meaningful and heartfelt and deep into the story of the man. It includes 42 games spanning 8 different platforms, all created by Jeff Minter. He's quite an author. He's an amazing guy. So, and Digital Eclipse does such a good job with these that you know it's going to be great. So it drops March 13th. You can pick it. It's everywhere. It's going to be on PlayStation, Xbox, Steam, Switch, all the places. So. Don't miss it. How about you, George? What do you got coming up?
Well, you know, right around the corner, not too far away.
Oh, jeez.
Deadpool and Wolverine 3, July 26th.
Just in the summer.
This year, just coming up. We're old now, so that'll take about 3 minutes for it to get here for us.
Yeah,
for the younger people, it might take a little bit longer. I'm still going to be looking forward to that every single episode till it gets here. Until then, though, on March the 5th over on Vice TV, it's the fifth season of one of my favorite documentary series that Vice TV has ever done. It's called Dark Side of the Ring. This is all about the dark side of professional wrestling. Really solid storytelling. They do a great job of getting the people involved who were there at the time. Most of the time, the person doing like all the narrator stuff is himself somebody who was involved in the business. Like the first year, I think it was Mick Foley. Another year, it was Chris Jericho, so on and so forth. So great series. If you're a pro wrestling fan, it's certainly worth watching. If you were only mildly interested in pro wrestling, it might be worth watching just so you get a little bit more of the flavor of what really went on with those people in their lives. So. Fifth season coming up, but the thing I'm looking forward to the most, March 22nd, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Just saw that new trailer for that. It looks really good.
Man, does this thing look good. They have done a better job with these two modern sequels in the Ghostbuster franchise than I want to say almost anything is done with an 80s property. It's
definitely
really
good.
Solid work that they've done. And they are coming from a very weak position. When you think about the Ghostbusters lady, let's do a whole new universe thing.
Reboot
that
deal.
I wanted to work and didn't work at all. I mean, they even Ghostbusters 2 is...
It's kind of meh. You're right. I tell you, the thing I think they found right is that the Paul Rudd character, he's a fan just like we are, but inside the universe. He's giddy about the Ghostbusters, just like we're giddy about the Ghostbusters, except he's inside the world. And that we can project ourselves on him, and that adds a lot of fun to it. So they're doing a lot of things right.
And plus, that guy never ages anyway. So
he does
a perfect actor to play that character.
I know.
But March 22nd in theaters. Do not miss it. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I really feel like they're going to do a great job with this one.
I'll be there. They're doing a Ghost Trap popcorn bucket if you want to get a collectible one. They have that one.
Ooh. So,
I wonder how that'll pair with the Dune popcorn bucket.
I'm not putting it anywhere near the Dune one. It's just not even related.
They won't cross-pollinate or anything.
No. Making new little popcorn buckets. No. Before we get out of the show, I want to take just a second to thank a brand new patron, Eric K, headed over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and said, hey, I like what you guys do. I know you give it away, but I want to support you so that we can make sure that you're financially stable and you continue to do what you do. Eric, thank you so much. It means the world to us. You probably already know if you're a listener or a viewer, you're joining a group of amazing. Like, we could not ask for a better group of fans and supporters and followers over in our Discord server. We talk to them all the time. We see them over in Patreon. Thank you so much, Eric, for signing up and pledging support for us. And listener, if you would like to join Eric and that roster of amazing people, it's really easy. Just head over to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp and I'll walk you through the steps. It's really easy. For as little as $1 a month, you can join us. And one of the things you can get for becoming a patron is a chance to ask a question of all three of us right here on the show. Yeah. Mo, do we have one for today?
Oh, absolutely. We do have a great question this time. This question comes from my lovely fiance, Amy, who actually is a patron of our show.
Wow. So, okay. Talk about a self-serving promotion. We got a great question today, folks.
This is the best question ever.
You better believe it. I'm going to do this. And I'm doing it shamelessly. And I don't give a fuck what you think.
She just bought Mo a new Dig Dug arcade cabinet. Look at that.
So, no, but actually, this question is really funny. So here it is. You die unexpectedly, and death comes and gives you a chance to play it one game to win back your life. In other words, you have to challenge it to a game and beat it, and you can win back your life.
Okay.
What game would you choose and why? So what are you really good at that you think you can beat death at?
I thought about this a lot. So you give us the question, you know, a day or so in advance. I've thought about this a lot. And it would be easy to, like, pick a game that's my favorite game or one I think I'm really good at or whatever. But this is my life on the line. And so I think I would choose tic-tac-toe, because if you do it right, you will always either win or draw if you do it right. So it's not about this fun. I don't like tic-tac-toe. I think it's boring. But if it's for my life, I'm going to do it because I know how to always at least have
a draw. As long as you set up the rule ahead of time that a draw means you play again.
Well, right. If a draw means purgatory, I'm screwed. You're right. Yes, certainly.
Yeah, because if a draw goes to the devil, you're going to hell.
All right. Yeah. So assuming a draw means play over, tic-tac-toe is my answer. So
that's okay. Okay.
Just for logistics. That's all.
What do you got, George?
Boy, it's a tough one. I'm not going to lie. I was overselling the fact that you were self-promoting, but Amy came up with a great fucking question. Since you asked it, I've been thinking. I mean, I enjoy a lot of games just like you guys do. I mean, if you look at the things I was really good at, you know, to even get paid for some of these things, baseball obviously is there, professional pool, pretty good at poker, a lot of these things. But to John's point, it's for my life, right? So there's an old adage in NBA basketball. If I'm giving one player the game winning shot, the last shot of the game, I'm giving it to Michael Jordan. If I'm giving one player the shot that'll save my life, I'm giving it to Larry Bird. That's what a lot of people have said in the NBA.
I see. Yeah.
For me, I think the one thing that I do the best that would either allow me to win or give me the opportunity to frustrate the devil so much that he would quit.
It was death, not the devil, death.
Well, death, devil, whoever. Okay. Yep. I think it would have to be a debate.
Good pick.
I would challenge them to a debate on any subject. The subject wouldn't really matter, because I think my strength is in picking any side and being able to argue it convincingly on the fly. So I think I would choose a debate.
Yeah, lead to your strengths, man. That makes sense. Yeah.
You pull from a collection of famous dead people to be the arbiters and decide who won.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go. Yeah, I gave this a lot of thought too. So, you know, my first thing, like you guys, my first thing was like, okay, maybe I go with Q-Bert. I could go for the high score. Who gets the high score in Q-Bert kind of thing, or, you know, the games that we play, right? But then I started thinking about it. I said, so if this is traditional death, I'm talking like the cowl with the sickle, bony hands, I'd probably challenge it to a swimming contest, because it cannot possibly be a good swimmer if it's just bones.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm not a good swimmer. I know that, but
right.
at least I can float and, you know, I have like something to help me with propulsion. But if you're all bones, you can move
your
hands.
He's got no buoyancy whatsoever is what you're going with, right?
And you move his hands, he cannot get any traction in the water. I mean, how much water could he possibly push?
Oh, Mo, what if he sinks to the bottom and just runs across the bottom of the pool?
Yeah, but still, bones are not heavy, so it'd be tough to push yourself through.
Okay. All right.
You know? So now that's assuming that it's traditional death and not death that looks like a regular person, because then I'll be screwed.
Right.
So John went with traditional childhood game. George went with try and frustrate the hell out of him. And Mo science the shit out of the question.
Well, the buoyancy of the average bone.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, how much can you possibly push yourself forward with bones for hands? You know, come on.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right.
So that was a lot of fun. So again, listeners, if you would like to throw a question our way, it's really easy. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp, sign up for any level, and we'll be happy to answer your question on air.
Put you in the list. Very good. Yeah, that was fun. Amy, good job. Nice question. Appreciate it. Now I'm still thinking about the buoyancy of bones. And I gotta move on. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. Don't worry, though. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a regular episode. And next week is our backtrack, where we pick a single nostalgic topic to dig in deep. George, why don't you tell the fourth listener what they can look forward to next week?
I am so happy we are finally getting to do this backtrack. So this is arguably one of my favorite sci-fi cult-y-ish kind of films from the VHS era. We are going to dive in deep on Lance Guest's magnum opus, The Last Starfighter.
Magnum opus might be an exaggeration, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
You are not going to want to miss that one. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all, though, and we will talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Since we're not worrying about the video, I don't have to worry about the...
Yeah, you can skip the white balance. Of course, this will be the episode something amazing happens in the video.
Well, in that case,
like your TV falls off the wall, and right? Just in case.
So you can't bitch at me.
Just in case.
I put mine up here.
Just in case. Yeah, I never know. It's been the best thing ever. I changed this, Mo. You had Deliver Mars. I think it's called Deliver Us Mars. Just
making
sure
right.
Didn't mess you up. Okay, that's cool. Just let you know I edited it. I can't say that. Edited it. Fuck.
Delicious.
I can say that. I can't say edited it. Fuck, I can't say. Okay, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Delicious.
Freddy is the
devil. Delicious.
That's all, folks.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.